Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya is pushing satire as far as it can go with his debut short story collection, Friday Black. He explores the violence, injustice, and painful absurdities that confront African Americans. Friday Black has been described as Black Mirror meets Black Lives Matter. But Nana has a different elevator pitch. I should warn you that part of our conversation contains violent imagery.
If you imagine three people sitting on a couch, and the first is like, you know, I really like this. It's really soft, you know, pretty good butt feel. It's like, feels pretty great. And the second's like, yeah, I also think this couch is like pretty awesome. You know, I feel like the lumbar is good, but it's just, you know, it feels really great for me just, you know, relax into it. And the third is like, yes, I also agree that the couch is nice, but I think we're overlooking the fact that it's made out of corpses. That's kind of what this book is.
Yeah, that's really good. Did you just come up with that recently?
No, someone asked me to sort of describe the book without summarizing it in any way, and that was the best I could come up with.
That's really good. I think that's a great description. In his review of your book, David Canfield says that Friday Black is part of a new pop culture trend that he calls new black surrealism, and he also says that it's in the same vein as movies like Get Out and Sorry to Bother You, as well as Donald Glover projects like Atlanta and This Is America. Canfield says that all of these works gain political power from a kind of absurdist framing. Would you agree with that?
I do think that there is sort of a absurdist framing, but I think that and that framing comes from the absurdity that is racism itself, the absurdity that is the way oppression just forces humans to do the opposite of what you would hope and expect them to do with each other. And the comparisons, I think, make sense. I wrote this book before Get Out came out, you know, several years before Get Out came out, actually. But I remember going to the theaters and being like, good, you know, this is allowed now, almost. If they're going to call it a trend, I don't know if I would agree with that word per se, but part of that is just the powers that be in the media being more open to allowing black creators to tell their stories in different ways. This kind of thing has existed before. It's just I think now some people are realizing they can maybe monetize it, and so now we're seeing it more.
Yeah. The first story in Friday Black is called The Finkelstein Five. I'd like to have you read the opening of it, please.
Absolutely. Fila, the headless girl, walked toward Emmanuel, her neck jagged with red savagery. She was silent, but he could feel her waiting for him to do something. Anything. Then his phone rang and he woke up. He took a deep breath and set the blackness in his voice down to a 1.5 on a 10-point scale. Hi there, how are you doing today? Yes, yes, I did recently inquire about the status of my application. Well, all right. Okay. Great to hear. I'll be there. Have a spectacular day. Emmanuel rolled out of bed and brushed his teeth. His house was quiet. His parents had already left for work. That morning, like every morning, the first decision he made regarded his blackness. His skin was a deep, constant brown. In public, when people could actually see him, it was impossible to get his blackness down anywhere near 1.5. If he wore a tie, wingtip shoes, smiled constantly, used his indoor voice, and kept his hands strapped and calm at his sides, he could get his blackness as low as 4.0. Though Emmanuel was happy about scoring the interview, he also felt guilty about feeling happy about anything. Most people he knew were still mourning the Finkelstein verdict. After 28 minutes of deliberation, a jury of his peers had acquitted George Wilson Dunn of any wrongdoing whatsoever. He had been indicted for allegedly using a chainsaw to hack off the heads of five black children outside the Finkelstein Library in Valley Ridge, South Carolina. The court had ruled that, because the children were basically loitering, and were not actually inside the library reading as one might expect of productive members of society, it was reasonable that Dunn had felt threatened by these five black young people, and thus, he was well within his rights when he protected himself, his library loan DVDs, and his children by going into the back of his Ford F-150 and retrieving his Hawtech Pro 18-inch 48cc chainsaw.
Thank you. This idea of a white man using a chainsaw to saw the heads off of five black children is so horrifying, and it's so violent. It seems like such an exaggeration, and yet the more I thought about it when I first read the story, the more it didn't seem like as much of an exaggeration as I would like it to. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I think a lot of my stories operate right in that space between familiar and hyperbole, But also, I think part of the reason for the chainsaw is that you can't ignore it. The way, unfortunately, it's almost become something to ignore young Black people being murdered by a gun, for example. You know, for me, whether you kill someone with a chainsaw, a pickaxe, or a gun, they're just as dead either way. And I think this story sort of pushes on that idea that this killing is happening gruesomely all the time, actually. Maybe not by chainsaw, but like, how bad does it have to be for us to really take notice?
Yeah, that chainsaw really gets your attention, as well as the fact that the guy is using it on five Black children. Mm-hmm. You also introduced this idea of code switching in the story, the idea of changing the kind of language you use when you're communicating with people from different cultural backgrounds. In The Finkelstein Five, your main character, Emmanuel, sets the blackness in his voice to various points on a 10-point scale, depending on who he's talking to. It makes me think of Boots Riley's film, Sorry to Bother You. And you actually, I noticed when you did the reading, you kind of did modify the voice to suit the character. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about this idea of code switching and why you decided to make it so literal, use this 10-point scale in the story?
Yeah, often my way into something like surrealism is by concretizing and literalizing something that I think is an abstract or mental experience. And so I think many Black people are familiar with the idea of code switching. Again, you know, I wrote this story several years before Sorry to Bother You came out, but I think it's like, seeing it in different places shows, like, you know, it's kind of a thing that the Black community at large understands and knows. That is, depending on where you are, things that might typically be associated with your being Black can be used against you, can be used to deny you things, and also can be used to make you a threat. And so in this story, the main character, Emmanuel, just his voice, not only his voice, but also his appearance, but also his like aura, a whole bunch of things on a 10-point scale. And I use a 10-point scale because in that literalizing, concretizing, it sort of becomes also, again, a little bit absurd because, you know, I think Blackness is not quantifiable. You know, Blackness is so many different things. But the stereotype of Blackness, the fear that people fear regarding Blackness is silly and reducible and based on things that aren't real. And so the scale allows me to play with the idea of adjusting yourself to appease someone else's gaze based on a paradigm that is inherently false in the first place.
Yeah. If you don't mind my asking, do you yourself ever adjust the Blackness in your voice? Do you code switch?
I think I absolutely code switch. You know, I think if I was talking to my friends versus in this interview, it would sound very different.
Can you quantify what setting you're at doing this interview?
No, because, you know, there is no real setting. Again, just from moving through the world, I think if you're Black, there's so many different ways you're going to have to adjust mm-hmm. yourself to be presentable. And it's not just Black people. I think so many different people from so many different spaces and identities have to sort of shave away parts of themselves to present as whatever it might be to be successful, upwardly mobile, or even just safe in any particular space. And so, yeah, no, for me, I'm sure I do. And what's fortunate is I think as I get further into something like success or something like maturity, I'm allowed to do it way less. Fortunately, I get to be myself 100% a lot more than I used to, and eventually I think I'll get to be myself all the time. And we'll see.
I've read that Ishmael Reed's 1972 novel, Mumbo Jumbo, had a very dramatic impact on you. In fact, you've said that reading this book kind of exploded your head. How so?
Yeah, I read Mumbo Jumbo, and you talked about sort of, I can't remember what you said it was called, the, quote, trend of Black realism? Is that what they call it?
Oh, the David Canfield quote, what he called, you know, new Black surrealism, yeah.
Ishmael Reed was doing a lot of things all those people you mentioned are doing in that book. I didn't realize prior to that you could be sort of so funny and, you know, I guess surreal and strange and perhaps even irreverent when talking about a Black experience or racism or any of those things or issues that were serious. And I think Ishmael Reed did that artfully and in ways that were interesting to me. You know, I like authors who sort of, in reading them, I sort of feel more powerful in that they show me, like, this is allowed, this is possible, yeah. This is a thing that can be done. And that book certainly did that for me.
Yeah, so I'm guessing something like the aborted fetuses that come back to confront their father in your story, Lark Street, that would be kind of an example of how Ishmael Reed's Mumbo Jumbo allowed you to let your imagination go as far as possible?
Yeah, and I actually might have started that story before I read Mumbo Jumbo, to be honest. But sometimes it's confirmation, you know, of what you've already like thought you might wanted to do, but were afraid to fully commit to.
Nana Kwame Adjei Brenya's debut short story collection is called Friday Black. You can find out more about Nana and hear him read an excerpt from the title story at wpr.org/beta.
She said, thank you for being here. And I said, of course, I love you. And that was the last exchange we had.
Suzzy Roach of the Roaches on the loss of her sister Maggie. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.